Welcome to the second hour, first edition here on WEAA 88.9. I am Sean Yose, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. Thank you for joining us or sticking with us for our second hour on this Wellness Wednesday. Support for WEAA Traffic and MTA Report is provided by ADT. More information available at ADT.com. Coming up in the second hour of the show, a little bit later, Lamont Summers will be here. He is Assistant Professor of Media Law and Ethics here at the School of Global Journalism and Communication. Professor Summers will be here with the media report. I'm sure it'll be Trump-heavy, given the unraveled, unhinged, rambling speech by the 45th president of the United States last night in Phoenix, Arizona. That's coming up a little bit later. But before we get to Professor Summers, Kenyatta Moon is here. She's co-host of Holistic Living. She is founder of the Interim Academy for Holistic Thought. Kenyatta, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Sean. How are you?
I'm okay. Before we get to work, let me remind listeners to make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9. And don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM, EAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yose. That is my name, S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S. So go to my Facebook page. If you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me, I'll share with the people, unless you don't want me to, and of course I won't. Back to Holistic Living with Kenyatta Moon. Continuing the conversation about self-care, this week we're talking about being honorable, something that, I got to say, the 45th president of the United States has absolutely no clue about what being honorable is all about. Because anytime someone lies as a matter of kind of living, like literally lying is literally the replacement for the truth or the replacement for reality for this 45th president. But for maybe many reasons, but the point is, living honorable, that sounds like something that should be easy for people, but it's really not necessarily, and it's hard to do.
Yes, it is. So it is. It's difficult to do. We have so many wonderful little opportunities to not be honorable. I mean, if we think about, like you're talking about our president from the top down.
Well, it's not our.
Well,
the 45th president.
The one that's
been, you know, that appointed. I've never written president of the United States connected to his name.
Well, what do you put?
And I just use his name.
You just say Trump.
Donald Trump, or I say the 45th president or the president, but I've never said those words on the air.
Personal protest.
Well, when you speak about living, being honorable, I don't know if the way he ascended to the White House wasn't honorable.
It was not honorable. No, it wasn't.
His behavior in the White House has not been honorable.
Definitely not.
His blaming of both sides in the Charlottesville tragedy was not honorable.
Right.
He's not an honorable person.
That's true. It's really true. And I mean, the thing is, you know, he wasn't honororable beforehand, but even listening
he's literally never been honorable in 40 years of public service in life.
That's not right. And even listening to, your segment before with Stephen and Taya and the dishonorable actions of the police officers that are, you know, being indicted right now. I mean, this, like you said, it is something that we see really pervasive. And it's not just about what I try to look at all the time is when I see behaviors that are really gross behaviors of people that could easily be pointed to. I still try to look at, can I say for myself that I never do these things?
I think that's the point. We can look at, that's a really important point, because every basically spiritual path warns against, you know, it's easy to point at Trump and say he's not honorable. And I do it because he's the 45th president. And I think that we have to be vigilant in that way.
Sure.
But at the same time, it should be a clue to us to look at our own houses.
Right.
And I'm not the president, and maybe I don't behave in the way he does, but I have to check my own closet. I have to check my own life. How am I not being honorable?
Right.
Because it's not an easy thing to do, to live honorably every second of every day.
Let me, it's so important. And the thing is, we can only really start with us because, I mean, this president is an example. Many people that we see in power are examples. You've seen, you know, pipeline protests. You've seen protests against all types of things. And people who are not holding honor don't care. So for me, my personal journey and my personal challenge is to work on myself with all the things that I see wrong in humanity, because every bit of that exists within each of us. We're always working to get outside of that. When we think about the monks who stay in meditation, they're not in meditation for 12 hours at a time because they are just, you know, honorable people through and through. It's because they're trying to still overcome their challenges and look at what depths they have to go to in order to try to live their most honorable way in this lifetime. And so I'll give an example of something that I do with the children at school pretty much every year that I've taught children about fourth or fifth grade, because I choose, in our holistic approach, we don't even introduce the concept of slavery to children before around the fourth grade, because before children of African descent, especially in the Americas, need to learn about slavery, they have to, of course, know the rich, full history that is often left out of the history books so that they have a sense of pride about them. However, with that sense of pride, every person, especially children, have to also think about being honorable human beings. And so the way that I teach them is that what we know, when we start to learn about the atrocities that exist within history and in current events, we have to understand that they all start with basic human decisions, one-on-one decisions between each person. And it is within each of us to work to build our character and to do practices that can help us be more honorable, be better towards one another, be better towards ourselves. Because before you know it, that small decision that two children can make of this is mine, you can't have it, or I want that and I'm going to take it, or teasing, any of the things that we see as basic childhood behavior, if that continues, that's how you breed arguments, and those arguments.
And teasing transforms into bullying.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It has the full potential of doing so. And so if we are not challenging ourselves to live more honorably in every interaction, in every moment, and it is a big, big challenge, then we're different in terms of scale. Yes, I don't have, you know, legions of people following me, and I don't make decisions that change policies.
And you don't have access to the nuclear codes either.
No, I don't. And that's so scary. So, you know, all we can do now is do the work on ourselves, for ourselves and for the people that we love and care about, and help to bring about a change, a shift to the planet, because what we see here is frightening. And it is a place of people without honor.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoes, your host, and it's a Wellness Wednesday. I'm in the studio with Kenyatta Moon. She's founder of the Interim Academy for Holistic Thought, co-host of Holistic Living. We're continuing the conversation about self-care, specifically talking about being honorable, how this practice takes care of you and the world around you. I want to also mention that on September 30th, we are heading towards the conference, the education conference, the Holistic Education Conference, helping our children be their best at the New Shiloh Baptist Church. Again, September 30th. Are there specific times?
Yes, we start at 11 a.m. That's when we're taking our registrations. So people arrive at 11. At 11:30, we'll get started with the activities. And I want to say it's more than just a conference. It's more than just talk, although there will be some great guest speakers, as you know, and guest facilitators. But we're going to be doing some things that people can take away and use within their lives and in their work with children. I'm really excited about that.
My good brother, Changa Bell, will be a part of the conference, as will Dr. Stacy Patton of Morgan State University as well. Sean Yoes,
your host.
Right. Sean Yoes, your host, will be facilitating the conversation with an interview with Dr. Patton. I might as well interview Changa Bell, too. I don't know. Changa's doing something different.
Yes, he's going to be doing some really amazing things. So we'll talk about that soon.
May be adding some other guests, participants as well. So that's coming up September 30th, helping our children be their best, a holistic approach. So back to the conversation, though.
Yeah. So today, we're going to talk about three ideas or three conversations about being honorable in our day-to-day lives. And we're going to do, this is going to be an interactive thing with you.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is after after each one, I want you to help come up with a mantra for each thing. Okay.
A mantra.
Right. Yes. So let's start. So we're going to start with being honorable with our promises. So often I have this challenge. So this is one of the reasons I want to bring it up, because again, my work is to improve myself. And if I can help with anyone else on the journey, then that's great too. So I know that I have this problem, being honorable with promises. And this tends to happen to those of us who generally mean well, but we overextend, we overpromise. And the tendency to do that generally comes from things like underestimating our challenges, like the time that we have to do things or the environment that we are within, the things that we have going on. It can come from not being fully in touch with our own needs. So again, getting back to that self-care aspect of checking in, knowing where I am in a space and a time, and not making promises based on things I was able to do last year this time, or things I know I'm able to do by degree or by education.
There's a mantra already.
Oh, good. I'm so excited. So, you know, just being in touch with who I am in this moment, in this time, and in this space, and accepting and acknowledging that it's not going to always be the same from day to day, and definitely not from season to season. And then another reason that I think that we do this is as a manifestation of our ego. And, you know, ego isn't always going to manifest as this, like, terrible thing. But sometimes we want to stand out as being important. We want to feel needed. Mm-hmm. We want to feel like an expert. We want to be important. Look, don't act like it's not a thing.
Well, it is a thing.
And I'm not saying everybody wants to be important, like I'm on the pedestal, got to hear me. But relevant. You want to be relevant. I mean, you want to know that you hold some importance to the people that you want to serve.
But the minute that you start believing that you're important is the minute that you get
downfall.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
The church people say ego, E-G-O, easing God out.
Easing God out, right?
Yeah.
So as a result of these things, we tend to overcommit. We underachieve, we feel stress, and we can suffer a loss in credibility. And so that's the idea behind being more conscientious of being honorable with our promises. So I'll start with an idea for a mantra.
Okay.
And then you give us one. So I'm thinking.
It's all connected to promises, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Just
being,
the first
being
one.
Honorable with our
with
promises.
Our promises. All right. So I thought of one that would be, I am practicing living in the present. I am being clear with what I can and cannot do. Something that simple. So just saying that to myself helps me personally to ease out any anxiety I may have by not being able to commit to something or seeing an opportunity, especially I tend to be a helper, and I want to, you know, if I see something, I'm like, okay, I can do that. And I can't. So being present with what I can and cannot do at this time and in this moment. All right. You got one?
Not really. I mean, I thought I did. I'm a headline writer as the editor of the newspaper. So I was thinking more of a headline than a mantra.
Let's hear yours.
But it's something to the effect of adhering to promises leads to a promise of power.
Ooh, I like that. How do you think that could be a mantra for sure?
Okay. Adhering to promises leads to a promise of power.
Yes. So, I mean.
But the point is, mm-hmm. I think it's connected to what you said. In order to adhere to promises, you have to make sure that you can adhere to promises.
Yes.
I will not break a promise, but I know that in order for me to make a promise, it's a big deal.
You have to know you can do it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even people who know me and love me are so patient with me because I tend to be late to things.
Yeah.
I know, who would figure? But that is a promise I can't always keep because I'm not being conscientious of everything I have going on. And therefore, so my credibility in terms of being a punctual person is at stake because I'm over-promising and over-committing. So being present to what I can and can't do. And though that honorability of promises is something that we need in the workplace, you know, it's something that we need in our family structures. It's something we need in our communities and for those who rely on us.
All right.
So the next one, do we have to break for anything?
No.
Okay. So the next one is being honorable with our language.
Mm. Lord have mercy on my soul. Hey, look, I'm going to tell you, I know me. And that's my daily prayer all day long. God forgive
me. Whatever you mean, share with us.
I have a problem with profanity and I ask God to work with me every single day on it. I mean, wow. I know who I am. So,
okay,
I mean, I'm constantly saying, so God forgive me, God forgive me, God forgive me, because, yeah.
We might have to have a whole segment on profanity, the pros and cons, the why and why not, because, you know, some may say, what's the problem with it, you know?
Yeah, it's just that language, you know, language has great power.
Intention and power, got it.
Now, what I can say that to as far as improvement is concerned, that road rage that I have, mm-hmm. I don't have that anymore. So
that's
thank
awesome.
God for that.
Right. So that, and I remember when you... made a commitment. So you know, hey, two forms of honorability. Is that a word? Honorability?
No. I don't think so.
No. Honorable
being
behavior.
Honorable.
Yeah. So
two
you
forms of being honorable.
Being honorable. Thank you. So one
honorability.
One was I can make up my own words.
You
if
can.
I
do.
So one was that you were honorable in your promise because you stated out loud. I heard you on the air. I've heard you in friendship circles. You said, I'm going to work on that road rage. I don't want to carry that anymore. I know
no,
it's not good
it's
for me.
Horrible.
And I think I gave you a challenge. You were like, I'm already doing it, you know. So you kept that promise. Mm-hmm. You were very honorable in that. So I want to acknowledge you for that. But also.
It ain't easy, but.
I know. Yeah. I know. But you were also honorable. You are being honorable with your language. And so that's a big, huge deal. And that is really big because, like you said, words in my tradition, we say words have ashe. They have power. Mm-hmm. They have a force that and people talk about it all the time, whether you are, you know, doing it from a religious or spiritual background or from a metaphysical background. And we talk about the law of attraction. One great big way we attract is to speak forth what we want. I mean, think about in prayer, why those who pray as advocates pray loudly. Think about why those who want to change the course of how people think use song. Sound is a vibration. And so what we say out of our mouths and the intention through which we speak our words change things. That really does change things. So if there is someone that I am in some type of relationship with and I am not speaking about them with honor, or if I'm speaking about them with dishonor, then I have to be responsible for what that does, for what vibration that sends out, for how that changes what other people think of that person if they hear it, you know. And so one thing that we have to think about is that old wisdom again. You know, I love the wisdom of our elders and mm-hmm. our ancestors, but if you cannot say it to the person's face, do not say it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, that's the, yeah.
If you have a question and you did not call that person to ask it, if you think something of someone and don't have the courage to go to them with kindness or with whatever and speak to them, then how dare you, you know, do say that about that person? And it's such simple wisdom, but it means so much.
I have a mantra.
Okay, good.
It's an easy one. Keep your words clean. Keep your life clean.
Oh, I love it.
Keep your words
keep
clean.
Your words
keep your
clean.
Keep your life clean.
So one thing that is good with mantras is we turn it into to I will
okay.
or I am.
I will keep my words clean. I will keep my life clean.
Ashe to that.
Ashe.
Ashe. Okay, I will keep my words clean. I will keep my life clean. I think I'm going to use your mantra.
Go ahead.
I'm
going
to post it and I'm going to share it with whoever chimes into the Holistic Living Facebook page. And so let's see, what can mine be? I am practicing using language that supports the best outcomes for myself and for others.
It's very
boom.
Very academic of you.
Does mine sound academic?
A little bit. You know, I'm a little simpler.
I love yours. I love yours. You have to love mine because I'm like, come on, be honorable, man, with your language.
All right.
Say
yours
love.
Is nice.
Okay. Thanks, Sean. Okay, and then the third one and the final one we're going to do today is being honorable by choosing to do what's right.
We're not going to come up with a mantra because we only have like a minute left, but.
We can.
Okay,
I believe in
go
us.
Ahead.
Come on. So choosing to do what's right means that if we take all that we talked about, plus, plus, plus. We know the right thing. You have that inner voice. So it's practicing listening to the inner voice that guides us towards the right thing instead of what may feel good in that moment. So come on.
Now you go ahead. I don't have one.
Okay. I didn't come up with it. I wanted us to be really spontaneous. So let's see. I am making the best choice in this moment. I don't like that one as much.
Let's work on that for next week.
Yes.
Let's work on that for next week. But the other two were really good. This was a really good segment, being honorable. That's something if we can keep that in the forefront of our minds, we can live better lives.
Yes, we can.
And we can help, I think, impact the lives of other people by doing such. I mean, I think that's a simple thing, but it's true.
Yeah.
Kenyatta Moon is the founder of the Inseroma Academy for Holistic Thought. She is co-host of Holistic Living. Great job this week. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Honorable Lamont Summers will be here. He's assistant professor of media law and ethics here at the School of Global Journalism and Communication. He will have the media report. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. Sean Yeos, your host. Winding down a Wednesday evening, a Wellness Wednesday. In the studio with me is Professor Lamont Summers, assistant professor of media law and ethics here at the School of Global Journalism and Communication. He has the media report. Professor, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back. Glad to be back as always.
Well, and I think the 45th president was glad to be back in Phoenix, Arizona last night, where he gave another, some would say, unhinged performance, rambling, unraveled, manic. I mean, you can use whatever adjective that you want, but I'm certain that that was something that you watched with some interest.
Well, I must admit that I saw part of it. I didn't see the whole thing. I saw part of it. I wasn't able to watch all of the
good for you.
The rally. Although I did see, curiously, and there have been stories about this, the black guy who was in the audience who was sitting behind Trump, and he had the sign "Blacks for Trump." And the Washington Post did a piece on it today, and so I thought that was pretty interesting. In fact, that was the first question that came to my mind was, "Who is this black guy standing up and having the sign saying "Blacks for Trump"?
He's not. He's not well. I mean, you read the stories.
Yes,
I mean, his background is extremely troubling. Connected to a very violent group, connected to, accused of murder, as a matter of fact, I believe. And what he's maybe even in some ways even more disturbing is the fact that they've been kind of flying this guy into different rallies just to have Trump's one token black. So I don't know.
Well, certainly when I looked at it, when I watched the part of the rally that I watched broadcast, the first thing that came, the first question that came to my mind is this guy, the Trump organization must have placed this guy or must have some kind of connection with this guy where they're strategically placing
Black
him in
Mike,
the shot.
I believe
he, Black Mike,
Black,
and he and
Black
he has
man
the
Mike,
sign.
Mike Black, the Black Man or something
yeah,
like
Mike
that.
Mike the Black Man, and he's just, he's strategically sitting there. And so every time you're watching Trump, he's in the camera shot. And every time Trump says something that deserves applause or gets applause, he stands up, he's shouting. And Trump, at several times, he would turn around and he would look to this guy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he not just looked at him, but he would look to the people behind him and he would give the thumbs up like everything's okay.
The adoration.
So I thought it was really interesting to see that this guy was there, particularly coming out of what happened in Charlottesville. You know, his remarks, you mentioned in your opening about that Trump was unhinged. He went really off the rails on Tuesday, yesterday at the rally.
Yeah.
I think this guy being there with the sign "Blacks for Trump," I think is a way to sort of temper or damp down some of the criticism that Trump had that he had received regarding his remarks and his flip flop with respect to what happened in Charlottesville during the demonstration and how he made the moral equivalency between the neo-Nazi skinheads and white nationalists and the counter demonstrators.
Right.
And then what I thought was interesting, the part that I did watch was when Trump said, when he was excoriating the media, and he was saying, look, media, what's wrong with you guys? He reached in his pocket and pulled out supposedly the text of what he said. And so he repeated his words, but he did not say
he omitted.
He left out the words.
The words that all sides, and both sides,
Yes.
And also omitted the phrase. Some on the side of the neo-Nazis were very fine people.
He described some of them as very fine people.
Yeah. We were just talking about being honorable. This is so presidents. U.S. presidents in modern era, if you just go back to the 20th century, many of them have been caught in titanic lies. But I don't think I'm not a presidential historian, but I do study history. There's no president that I can think of in the modern era, at least, that has been caught in so many daily lies. I mean, who has on a daily basis been caught in lies publicly. There has not been one day, correct me if I'm wrong, there has not been one day in the administration, in the Trump White House, that this man has not been caught in a public lie. If there's been a day, I don't know what day it is.
Well, I can't say with the degree of certainty that a day hasn't gone by where he hasn't been caught
in
a public lie. But I think the premise of what you're saying is that Trump is a habitual liar.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
So I think that's been established. But I think the question that I'd like to pose is whether or not journalists, in their questioning of Trump, should they approach him and say, President Trump, are you in fact lying? Or are you in fact telling us a lie? Instead of dancing around it or just presenting us with the facts, presenting us with what Trump says mm-hmm. and then what the facts are, should more and more journalists come out and essentially call Trump on the carpet in their questioning? In which they say, President Trump, that is not the truth.
Well, exactly.
You are in fact communicating a lie because the truth is, right. And the facts are, da 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 da.
But we've seen, on certain circumstances, reporters say, Mr. Trump, this is not accurate, or this is I've heard reporters say, or him be challenged, and I've heard him say, well, somebody just handed this to me.
Yeah, but saying something is not accurate, or suggesting that the president is not, that his facts are inaccurate, is not the same as saying, Mr. President, are you lying?
Well, he would. His retort would be to immediately call that person and reporter a agent of fake news. You're reporting fake news, and that. But I've seen other scenarios where he has been confronted. I don't know if they said, "Are you're lying directly?" But he, when he's confronted, he'll immediately default to, "Well, somebody just handed this to me, or this is somebody else's fault, or what?" You know, so it could be that, or it could be just it's fake news. It's all fake news.
Or like in the case of his first reaction to the demonstrations and the violence that occurred in Charlottesville, where he said, "I didn't have all the facts in yet."
Right. Which has never stopped him before.
Right. Yeah. Especially, and we talked about that in previous shows. You know, I thought, and I think a related question is whether or not journalists should start questioning President Trump's fitness for office. And I know you have been saying that for some time. You've been saying it and saying. In fact, you've been saying it. I recall you saying it last year. And in fact, I even recall you saying it that he wasn't fit to run for president even during a campaign. I also recall you questioning his mental state. We've had discussions on this segment questioning his mental state. And so now you're starting to see people like James Clapper, who's come out and who's saying, who's come out unequivocally
questioning the fitness of the 45th president.
Questioning the fitness of the president. And there are some leaders, some GOP leaders on Capitol Hill.
Bob Corker, Senator from Tennessee.
Senator Corker was on some of the Sunday shows a week ago, in which he came out specifically saying, "I question this man's fitness and ability to be president of the United States," and especially they question his ability to have the nuclear codes and could possibly launch a nuclear attack against North Korea, for example, in a fit of rage.
To be 100% clear, when we talk about Bob Corker, this is a man that I disagree with on just about every type of political spectrum and just about every question, every big question in the political arena. But certainly a man who is known to be honorable, number one, and absolutely not given to hyperbole or exaggeration. And for him to say, for Bob Corker to say that this president is not he unstable, that he hasn't, I believe the phrasing was something like he has not demonstrated the stability to be the commander in chief. That is a damning indictment from someone like Bob Corker, of all people.
So why do you think, and if I may ask you a question.
Yeah, sure.
Why do you think that more and more journalists aren't picking up the mantle and starting to that line of questioning?
Because you know what Trump is? Trump is what we used to call when we were kids a crack artist. He's a crack artist. The guy who always cracks on you and can put you down and come back with the retort that puts you down, your mama or whatever it is. He's the guy he's like that type of a child that when somebody
he's a dozen playing the dozen.
Yes, right. When somebody attacks him, his immediate response is to attack them personally. To attack personally, fake news. You CNN asked the 45th president a question. His retort is fake news, and he's good at it. He's actually talented in that way, like a child would be. So I suspect, in a very kind of basic way, that a journalist would be hesitant in making an assertion of whether or not the president is mentally ill or whether or not the president is lying for fear of that type of retaliation and being neutralized. Because ultimately, there is a level of neutralization that happens when a reporter asks a question and all of a sudden the president of the United States just points at him and says, "You're fake news." It's hard to kind of carry on a line of questioning when you're being referred to as fake news in a very basic way.
But I'm wondering if journalists are not fully engaging in their responsibility that they owe to the public by not questioning his fitness for office and perhaps even his mental state. Maybe for the reasons that you've articulated.
I think that's true.
Because certainly, if journalists are supposed to look at, dig the facts and dig beneath the, look for the facts, look beneath the surface, and look and try to find answers to the questions that are affecting our society and that many of us in the public want to know. Certainly, the public, there are people in the public, many of us are questioning the president's fitness and his mental state.
You know, you don't have any you have no problem from me, Professor, on that count. I think it is absolutely appropriate that journalists do question his mental fitness. You don't have to be a mental health professional to see if you have a president of the United States. When you look at the press conferences that he held at Trump Tower, him engaging back and forth and the way he was engaging. I mean, he just doesn't seem well.
Well, his decision recently to decide to increase military troops in Afghanistan, he came out and said his instincts were to withdraw. But then he was convinced by his advisors, former generals, military generals, that we needed to stay in Afghanistan. In fact, not only stay, but we needed to increase the number of troops there. So how is it? I mean, what information, what facts informed his instincts? I mean, I'm not comfortable, and I don't think too many people are comfortable with a president who makes decisions based on his instinct, given the erratic nature of this individual, of President Trump, especially given his history.
You get no disagreement from me in that area either, Professor. For those of you who don't are looking for that article in the Washington Post, you can go to my Facebook page and find it. The headline, the Washington Post headline, is "The Strange Story of That Blacks for Trump Guy Standing Behind President of the United States POTUS at His Phoenix Rally." The gentleman, I'm using the term gentleman, Michael the Black Man, is a strange character. Anyway, so let's move on, though, Professor. Two very important questions, though. I do predict that there are going to be more and more journalists questioning his fitness. Now that Clapper has questioned it, now that Bob Corker has questioned his fitness, these are two very sober individuals. I don't see how they are not. I mean, how journalists don't question. And to your point, they're not doing their job if they don't.
And of course, the next question, the logical question from that would be, are we heading or possibly in the possible zone of questioning whether or not this president should be removed under the 25th Amendment?
Say it one more time. I was reading.
Should we then be thinking about the possibility of proceedings being done which would ultimately end up in the removal of this president under the 25th Amendment?
I think in the first step censure prior to impeachment.
Yes.
There have been calls for censure, especially given the horrific comments made in the wake of the Charlottesville tragedy. And then even last night, I think there could be a stronger case made for censure, given the fact that by him speaking, I heard a clip of him lamenting the fact that these Confederate monuments are being taken out of city parks. They're trying to tear away our culture. They're trying
heritage.
To destroy our heritage. Mm-hmm. That's thinly veiled white nationalist talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, but I think it's abundantly clear. We've been saying it for 2 years, but I think it's abundantly clear, even in the mainstream media, that this 45th president is a white nationalist. And I don't know what else you want to say. If that, you know, if that's okay with you, I guess you shouldn't protest. But clearly, it's not okay for many, many people, including me. But certainly, I think that the case for censure has been made. Whether or not it will happen, who knows? It's still a very political game that people are playing, and That's just the way it is. Let me take a phone call real quick, Professor. Let's go to Clarence in Baltimore, who has a question or comment. Clarence, you're on with Professor Lamont Summers. How you doing, Clarence?
Hey, thank you. I'd just like to say this, Sean and Professor. If I were to go through 1,000 conspiracy theorists on the internet, there are only about 5 people that I actually pay any attention to. Even the crazy ones out there will tell you that the only reason that the United States military is still in Afghanistan, it's because they have to protect the poppy fields and ensure that the production and the growth of poppy is at a constant level. That's an economic resource that the United States, whatever you want to call it, that's the only reason he was informed. No, you can't pull the military out of Afghanistan because we can't protect our interest there in the poppy fields. That's how simple that is, Sean. And even the crazy ones will tell you that. Thank you.
All right, Clarence.
Mm. That's interesting because I thought the price of heroin is very low now.
It is very low.
And so I would imagine, I'm not sure if there's a lot of profits being made from heroin, which is derived, of course, from poppies, from opium. So I would wonder whether or not that argument of protecting the poppy fields would hold up given the low cost of heroin.
Well, the cost of heroin is low, but not the cost of all opioids, which derive from the poppy plant.
Okay.
Opioids are actually, you know, and they're doing a brisk business.
Yes,
unfortunately.
That's right.
So let's take one more call. Let's go to Kelly in Baltimore. Kelly, you're on with Professor Lamont Summers. How are you doing, Kelly?
I'm fine, thanks. Thank you. I would like to know if you think it would be a good strategy for journalists to just do a blackout, Trump blackout, no news about Trump, just news for a week to see how fake he really thinks our journalists are, or in our major, you know, news.
Interesting.
News broadcasters.
Kelly, thank you for your comment. So we kind of had this discussion before.
We had something similar to that.
Where I feel like journalists covering or reporting on every Trump tweet is, to me, insane. Because half of it is not even real. Now, that's fake news. But you believe that it's the 45th president, so therefore it becomes news.
Well, it's the office.
Right.
It's the office. It's not Trump.
Right.
It's the office. And Trump happens to occupy the office right now, but it's the office, and it's the third branch. It's one of the three branches of government. And so I think that our press has an obligation, a responsibility, a historic responsibility. I mean, part of the reason why we have a First Amendment freedom of press in the first place is so that they could serve as a check on government. Government activities, government excess, et cetera. It just so happens now that we have a person in that office who is a master manipulator. We've said a liar, someone who certainly is playing a game and doing things in a way to try to manipulate the power that he has, and he's using social media to be able to bypass established channels and also using Fox as his platform of choice, along with Twitter, to be able to reach his base. And so I think the idea of a blackout is an interesting one, but I think because media is commercial, because much of media, we're looking at mainstream media, commercial media, and so they have to. So these are businesses. And so they're there to make money. And so we've said it before in this show, and it's been said a number of times, that Trump is good for business. Trump is bringing in the ratings. He's bringing the clicks. People are clicking on him. You may hate him. You may love him. Many people dislike him, find him abhorrent. But we still can't stop talking about him. We're still talking about Trump. And I know you've said on this show, I'm tired of talking about Trump. And I've said to you, I don't think you can avoid not talking about Trump.
No. Wednesday, I know I'm going to talk about him.
Trump, and I think one of the things that he does, he makes sure that he injects himself in public discourse, so that you almost have to talk about him, if nothing more than at least to report on what he said. And sometimes he'll pivot off to another topic or he'll throw out a flamethrower, a bomb in which he knows is going to cause a lot of uproar. And sometimes that's done to take people's attention away from the real story.
Yeah.
And he does that. And he's a master of doing that. Absolutely. And we keep following that. And it keeps us engaged. It keeps us talking about it. It keeps all those pundits talking and give them something to do. It gives critics stuff to write about. It gives you and I things to talk about on this show. And so I think there's there's an industry.
But let me ask you this, Professor. And I know you're not a mental health professional, but I mean, we're talking about whether he is fit to be in office. But ultimately, have you ever wondered, how does he do it? How is he able to just constantly engage at this level of insanity every single day, essentially 24 hours a day? Because it feels like he never sleeps, or rather, when he does sleep for a few hours, the minute he wakes up, he's on Twitter. It is absolutely mind-boggling to me that this 70-some-odd-year-old man is able to engage at this level of lunacy day in and day out.
Well, he's been doing this for much of his life. I mean, he didn't just start doing this.
I know.
I mean, the Trump that we have today, it has been well documented in books and articles, et cetera, even books that he's written, The Art of the Deal. I mean, remember, we've even said it on this show. Trump used to call up newspapers and claim to be a PR person and disguise his feeding them tips. And so he used to do things like that. So Trump also learned at the feet of Roy Cohn, the infamous attorney who was the advisor to Senator Joe McCarthy, who took Joe McCarthy's shenanigans to a newer level, to a higher level, if you can believe that. And Trump learned from Roy Cohn. So I think, I mean, I'm not surprised by Trump and what he's doing. I think I think that it's going to be difficult for the media to avoid him, particularly commercial media avoid him. I mean, he is newsworthy. I mean, he's what he says makes news, and people are interested in it. And there, if nothing else, to discuss it, to critique it, and to show how wrong it is. But nevertheless, he's still the topic of and a subject of a lot of people's interest when it comes to the president of the United States and what the president of the United States is doing or is not doing, more importantly.
He is the embodiment of the phrase or mantra, since we were speaking about that in the earlier segment. He is the embodiment of the phrase, all publicity is good publicity. I mean, he believes it doesn't matter what good or bad. It's publicity, and it means he's relevant, and he's in the mix, and that's all he wants.
And you know, somebody else who also that Trump learned from, who was also an important figure when it came to the use of media, was Roger Ailes, the late Roger Ailes.
Absolutely.
I mean, absolutely a genius. I mean, we've talked about that in terms of his impact and what he did with Fox News, and the point that you're making about publicity. I mean, good publicity. Publicity, getting folks to talk about you, whether it's good or bad, you got them talking about you.
Right.
And so that's what matters. And so I think Trump is a master at doing that. I think my concern is whether or not we're at a point where I'm concerned that Trump might make a decision that could have devastating effects or an impact on this country or the planet. You know, in a broader sense, no doubt.
We probably should make that the last comment, but Professor, as long as he's in office, we'll have something to talk about on Wednesday. That's for sure.
Well, that's true. I mean, in fact, it's almost like we're wondering. It's like going from Wednesday to Wednesday. It's like, what's going to come
what's
out
next?
The next day? What's next? What is he going to do tomorrow? The next day after that. I mean, so it's hard to really keep up with the things.
Is he
gonna
resign?
Going to resign? I don't think so, no. I think the talk about he's really trying – I think I was watching one of the shows, CNN or MSNBC, in which they had some guests on there saying that Trump is really trying to lay an exit, a graceful exit strategy for himself so he can bow. No, Trump Trump is a winner. Trump likes to win, or at least
he loses every day.
Trump perceives himself as a winner,
yeah.
And losing is not an option for Trump.
He loses all the time.
I mean, he doesn't want to – he doesn't see himself as a loser.
Yeah.
He sees losers are weak, and he doesn't see himself as being a weak person, and he would never, ever admit being a loser. And the fact that he became president, and I think he's riding on a lot of that. I think a lot of people thought that he would never be president, that he was a
no
joke,
doubt about that.
That it was a joke, that why was he running for president when he could never be president?
Yeah.
And Trump, I think the last thing that Trump wants to do is to admit or have people think that he's not up to the job. He's not up to the task.
He's not. And I think he's going to resign. But that's my opinion. You could be right, though. I mean, God, oh, who knows? Lamont Summers is Assistant Professor of Media Law and Ethics here at the School of Global Journalism and Communication. Professor, thank you. We'll see you next week.
I see you next week. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. That is it for us. That is it for First Edition. It is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by executive producer Sean Yeos and associate producer Iorio Digizua. Board operators are Andre Melton and Ty Rice. First Edition interns are Isaiah George, Wyman Jones, Alex Blanc. Stay tuned for my main man, Changa Bell, the host of the Relationship Experience, next, right here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I am Sean Yeos. Peace. It's the questions, yeah. The questions, it's the questions, y'all. It's the questions, it's the questions, dig it. The questions, it's the questions, y'all. It's the questions, it's the questions. Come on, the questions, it's the questions, boy. It's the questions, yeah. The questions, it's the questions, boy. It's the questions, it's the questions, yeah. The questions, it's the questions, y'all. It's the questions, it's the questions, dig it. The questions, it's the questions, y'all. It's the questions, it's the questions, come on, the questions, it's the questions, boy, it's the questions, it's the questions, yeah, the questions, it's the questions, boy, it's the questions, it's the questions, yeah, the questions, it's the questions, y'all, it's the questions, it's the questions, dig it, the questions, it's the questions, y'all, it's the questions, come on, the questions.